Hi, everyone. It's Stephen Schlenker. Thank you for downloading this week's episode. Episode 264, it looks like. Oh, my goodness. We've only got one more sheet, two more sheets of paper here of notes. Wonder what that means. I have no idea. Well, maybe you do have an idea if you follow us at Major Spoilers on Twitter. You'll know everything that's going on at Major Spoilers, so do sign up. And also sign up for our email list. This is a plug for a lot of things. Sign up for our email list so you know when all the cool things are happening. If you're still wanting a bookmark, you can get a bookmark by sending a SAISY, a self-addressed stamped envelope, to Major Spoilers, Attention Bookmark, 1309 West 44th Street, Hayes, H-A-Y-S, Kansas, 67601. We'll put that right in the mail to you. We've got a bunch of them. Just send those SAISYs. We'll send them back to you. My wife is the envelope stuffer. She likes reading all of your notes. Then she passes them on to me, and I enjoy reading them too. Thank you, everybody. And finally, the moment that you've been waiting for, the Major Spoilers store is open for everyone who wants to get that Critical Hit sketchbook, a poster, a t-shirt, a Critical Hit flask. I think we're going to add postcards up here in a few days. The person who runs the site, Dave, he's out at Dragon Con this weekend. But yeah, for those of you who didn't get the Critical Hit sketchbook at Nerdtacular 2014, here's your chance to get it now over at the Major Spoilers store. You can find a link to it at majorspoilers.com. Or just point your browser to majorspoilers.bigcartel.com, majorspoilers.bigcartel.com. You can find everything right there. Oh, dice bags too. Oh, those should be, I should be noted, those while supplies last. Those are a limited edition thing for now. All right, everybody, that's all I have to share. Short and sweet. Want to let you know. Bookmarks, Major Spoiler Store, sign up for the email, follow us on Twitter, check out this episode. We'll be back next week for more. Welcome to Critical Hit, a Major Spoilers Dungeons & Dragons podcast. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing this episode with a friend. Get everybody into Dungeons & Dragons. Let's start a whole new movement where 90% of gamers, regardless of what games they play, play Dungeons & Dragons at least once a month.
Yeah.
You guys ever go to those encounters? Not like the encounters where we have to have Rodrigo, have to have him sit down and talk. That kind of an encounter, but
no.
You ever go to encounters at any of the gaming stores?
Mm-mm. No, I don't think. I think the nearest one that ran encounters back when that was going on strong is at least an hour from here.
Oh,
so
is there one in Salina?
I think so. I don't know if they even ran them.
They still do encounters, though, right? That's still a thing, right? I mean, so, people still do that.
I don't know if they're still going.
I'm not sure.
Do encounters, Matthew? Tuesday nights?
Know.
Oh, okay.
They still have encounters. That's still a thing.
Okay.
That's definitely still a thing.
Yeah. At least at the time of this recording, it's still a thing.
I still get invited to those.
They'll probably transition it over
April
to
April of 2009.
D&D next.
Well, I mean, there's a... I've got the D&D starter set here, and there actually is a...
This is for D&D Next.
There's actually a sheet in here that says D&D Encounters. Build your character and play at a store near you.
Yeah. My guess is those are quick going to get transmogrified into D&D Next.
It has a character sheet.
Yeah, there's a character sheet on the back of that.
Character sheet!
That's branded with Encounters, though.
I put my zip code in the Encounter store locator, and it nearly exploded. So I'm thinking maybe not so much with a local.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's just sitting there staring at me like.
Did you ever go to encounters?
No, I never ended up doing that.
Adriana, what about you?
No, I want to try it though. I need to just get up the nerve to hang out with people that are strangers.
Ugh, fair. I know that feeling. I hate.
Everyone's like, "Ooh, gross."
Yeah, pretty much.
It's not ooh gross, it's just like ugh.
Well,
awkward.
Most of us are. I went to a pre-release and I was like ugh gross, but Rob went to like 5 pre-releases.
Didn't get
He's
5.
There for the cards, not
5
the people.
5 would have been perfect because they give me 5 pre-release cards now, which is a pain in the ass to collect.
Well, wait a minute, you're not talking about Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, that's right. We're talking about...
not allowed!
Yes. Whatever, nerd.
We're talking about another fine product by Hasbro.
By Wizards of the Coast.
The G.I. Joe action figure.
Yes. It's the G.I. Joe troop carrier. We went to the pre-release for that.
I totally have one of those. It's in my garage. They're awesome. Well,
all 12-year-olds in 1985 were super jealous of you.
They were. I didn't have the big aircraft carrier, yeah. But I had the airplane. I still have the airplane.
I have a, quote, in quotes, friend who had the big. That's, he had every G.I. Joe.
G.I. Joes were too small. For me, yeah. Like, they're troop carriers. You couldn't put any dinosaurs into them. So I kind of wasn't interested. I was interested in other vehicles. Then Dino Riders came out. And yeah, I was like, yes, okay, I can see the appeal of smaller figures this point. But they had to be riding dinosaurs for me to be interested.
For me, it was a cost issue.
Why did you say quote-unquote friend, Steven?
You know, it's one of those people that...
Are they dead now? Because
he may be the kid that you hang out with just to play with his toys.
He may be because he was really kind of sickly for a long time. Aww. There were several times where he would pass out in class, and we'd have to call the ambulance to have him hauled away.
You know what?
And then he moved away, and I never heard from him again.
There have been great.
Oh my god!
There have been great advances in science since then. I'm sure he's a cyborg now.
Maybe
on Critical Hit.
Yes. So
let's get back to our happy scary time. That's not real.
Let's see. Where did we leave off?
We were packed up and we were walking to meet a contact.
That's right.
And it was Orm's family,
mm-hmm.
Mr. and Mrs. Rivendor,
mm-hmm.
Camus,
mm-hmm.
Orm, and the rest of those guys. Yes. A couple of very nice gnomes.
That's right.
Trell's girlfriend.
Yes. Yeah. So yes, that did in fact happen. Orm's father, basically you all walk to the edge of that leaf, and then there's kind of this vine that circles down from that trunk. You guys manage to use that to walk down onto another branch, then off onto another branch, then off onto another branch. They don't walk super fast, but definitely... all of the Eladrin are almost supernaturally graceful, so they don't really do a lot of stumbling over all the little knots and knobs and stuff that the branches have, and you know, the veins on the leaves and things like that,
mm-hmm.
which some of the rest of you might a little bit. So they're not leaving you behind because they're not really walking super fast. But
right. You know... Legend of Korra, Book 2,
mm-hmm.
you know, Korra's cousins.
Yes.
That's how I picture Camus and Orm.
Yeah.
But with blonde hair and mm-hmm. much taller.
I've actually heard someone else say that, so I don't think you're alone in
okay.
that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just how they just float along.
Yeah, and that is kind of, it is impressive to see four Eladrin in formation.
And then a bunch of jerks behind them.
Yep.
Orm's father has goose on his hat.
Yep.
That's a Top Gun.
No, I get it. I know. I get it.
Matthew, stop. No selling my jokes.
5.5 years on this show, and I'm still just one of those jerks walking behind Orm. 5.5 years.
Compared
hasn't
to
been
them.
5.5 years.
I've had marriages that didn't last 5.5 years.
Me either.
Oh, so behind us are two fantastic gnomes and some other jerks.
Yeah. So this group walks for a while, and eventually you reach a tree with a big hole in it, like something like a colossal woodpecker might have created. Similar to the one that actually you guys walked out of from the Feydark. Once inside, just immediately inside, Orm's father stops walking and just stands around. And he says, our contact should be meeting us here soon.
Okay.
Chaw looks around.
Awkward.
Look towards Orym.
Father, have you... Obviously, you've thought about plans when we encounter Spud. Do you have any time to share any of those now?
We have a few plans, but we should... I mean, I have... it's complex. Let's wait until we find a table so we can set up and talk about things. I mean, if you have anything urgent that you need to tell me, we can talk about it.
Look at Ked.
We have cold iron.
I noticed that.
We have some ideas as to how to disrupt Spud's power.
Good. Write them down clearly, and we'll talk about that when we find a paper.
Do they even have paper?
Oh, I'm sure they do.
Yeah.
I pat Kid on the back. You did a really good job.
Then he turns around, almost completely turns his back on Ket, and says, "Oh, good. Our guide is here." And out of the darkness of the inside of the tree trunk comes out a little hedgehog.
Yes!
Yay!
Yes!
He is wearing a little round hat with a short brim, so a little bowler hat.
Oh no!
And walks up to the group, kind of at a polite distance, and goes, "Hello!
We know this guy, yeah?"
Yes.
Yes.
You met him before. You can tell because he has a bowler.
Hello. Nice to see you again.
I don't know if there's more than one with that hat.
Yeah. It's rude to judge people based on their hats.
Yeah.
I wasn't judging. I was identifying.
Well, you know what they say.
I said, "Hello. It's nice to see you again."
Hello.
You've been doing okay?
Yeah, I think so.
Good to hear. So you're going to guide us somewhere?
Uh-huh.
Excellent.
Was Bowler the one we met here, or then the...
I thought we met Bowler in winter.
Nope.
No, winter was Tex.
Yep.
Poke was spring.
Poke was spring, which means party was...
Autumn.
Autumn.
Nope.
No, party was summer.
Party summer.
Right. Okay.
Yes.
Wait. How many seasons are there?
Four.
Many.
Well, that's complicated. See, the first season was just a pilot season and only four episodes.
Then there's the season of the witch.
All right.
The season of the mist.
So, Bowler turns around and says, "Follow me." And...
gesture for father.
Yes, Orym's parents start following immediately.
Aww.
So you guys go into the darkness. But immediately, Orym's mother produces a little mote of light that lights up the way.
Oh, good.
You walk for a few feet. And in the tunnel, there is a little kind of growth, like a knot. And sitting on either side of the knot are two other hedgehogs. One of them has a little bonnet, and the other one has a little conical paper hat. And they are both, in fact, tiny. They are holding a hand. Each of them is holding a handful of cards, and they appear to be playing cards.
Oh, no. Wait, that's not Party, is it?
Yep.
Because Party was huge.
She's wearing a party hat.
Poke and Party.
Yeah.
Party.
She turns over to look at you.
Oh, you're small now.
Yeah, it was only temporary.
Do you prefer being this size?
It's okay.
Hello, Poke.
Hello.
It's so good to see you again as well.
You too.
What game are you playing?
Hearts.
Wow.
Party, are you winning?
I think so.
Excellent. Bowler, have you ever played?
Oh, yeah, I'm not very good at it.
You are so mean.
Well done.
Whatever, I can do this. Bring it.
Quarters.
Stagsy, what are you doing here? And the ghost of Pony? And Christopher Walken.
We have, yes, our secret weapon is the United States military. I promise you to fully commit all of our forces to eradicating the threat of Spud at home and abroad. This is my promise to you. Now, Secretary of Defense, George Takei.
Oh my.
All right, I'm done. That was my terrible, terrible Obama. Thank you.
That was beautiful.
Thank you. Camus goes, "Hi, Party." And Party goes, "Camus, you want to play cards?" He's like, "Oh, we need to go." He's like, "Oh, okay." Poke and Party put their cards away. Like, they put the deck together, and Party puts it under her party hat.
Nice.
Then they all start walking along with you. And as you walk, slowly, really kind of imperceptibly, like, all of a sudden you realize that you are no longer inside a tree, but in fact in a tunnel that's made of dirt, like just kind of packed dirt.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
And it very quickly shrinks. Like, it's not actively shrinking, but it just becomes tighter and tighter and smaller and smaller. To the point where basically all of you have to duck to move through it. And there are these roots coming out of the walls. And every once in a while, especially on the Eladrin, the roots will actively move and try to, like, snag their clothes or their hair or grab a hold of them.
Okay.
Why are they going after the Eladrin specifically?
Well, they're going after everyone. They just seem extra excited to grab onto the Eladrin.
Do they seem like they're alive?
Oh, yes. Yeah, these are roots.
Do they scream when I rip them out of the walls?
Tor grabs one and pulls it out of the wall, and, like, just more root comes out. And now that one is, like, extra long, so it, like, grabs.
No, like, no, Tor, let it go. Let it go.
One of the hedgehogs turns around and walks over to Tork. We'll say it's Bowler. He goes, "You okay?"
"Yeah, but I don't like these things."
"Oh."
"Wait, I got an idea."
"What?"
"Hey, Ket."
"Yeah?"
Hit me real hard.
Shing.
No. I ain't that stupid. I was just thinking how if they hit me hard enough, my armor will cut them off the walls and we'll have a bigger hole."
"Well, we usually don't have to deal with these because we're pretty small. But in really small holes, sometimes these roots are problems for us too. We have a way of dealing with that."
What do you do?"
"I was like, we sing a song and they fall asleep."
"Oh, really?
Huh.
How's that song go?"
"How's the song go?"
Bowler walks over to the other hedgehogs, and he, like, lifts up his hat, and there's, like, a little tuning flute, and he blows on it. So I'm gonna sing you this hedgehog song.
Oh my god.
But I'm only going to do it as Poke because I can't do three voices at once. So you guys are walking, and the hedgehog starts singing this song. and the roots immediately start to react.
Oh my god.
Me. Lover lost and lover spurned. Words unsaid and gifts returned. Iron sword, silver spoon. I hope you will forgive me soon.
Aww.
Friendship lost, love dissolved. None relent and none absolved. By the ever-shifting moon, I hope you will forgive me soon.
And then they all just kind of, like, do that little eerie melody over and over again.
La la la, la la la. Roots go away, la 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 la. That's a pretty song. It's kind of sad though.
What is Worm's father's reaction to all this shenanigans?
Stoic.
Once, like it seems that after a while, the song has like some kind of semi-permanent effect. So the hedgehog stops singing, but the roots continue to react to it. He actually turns to Poke and says, "That's a very old song, isn't it?" And she goes, "It's very old." Hmm. You guys walk for a little while longer, and eventually you see daylight out the other side. And pretty soon, everybody's out of the tunnel, and you find yourselves in a meadow.
Do we make it to spring?
Yes, this is a spring wood.
Okay.
Pulls out, or Orm's father pulls out a compass. We should find a suitable place to camp pretty close. I've received some reports, and there should be a pretty perfect spot, also one that allows us to, within relatively short traveling distance, have a good look at Spud's base of operations.
Okay, that sounds good.
So you guys walk for a little bit, walk through some trees, and eventually, after basically pretty much as far as you can tell, making a U-turn, you end up in a completely different place. And it is, in fact, kind of elevated, but flat, surrounded by trees. But mostly just kind of downy grass with a few flowers. Fairly wide, a place where you could easily set up 10, 12 tents and still have plenty of room for a central, like, large bonfire.
Okay.
He says, if... Camus, why don't you scout around, see if there's anything immediately around that we need to deal with.
I'll come with you.
Camus starts moving towards the edge of the meadow. He just makes a motion towards the gnomes, and the gnomes start setting up camp.
Trell follows after Camus.
Yeah. Camus goes into the forest, the two of you have a look around, and there does not appear to be anything immediately posing any threats to you.
Have I been here before?
It's hard to tell, because when you were here, the Feywild was in a weird flux.
Okay.
So, I mean, some of the vegetation is familiar, but also it's not crazy and trying to kill you like a lot of the time.
Right.
So
kill Walter.
Yeah, it's hard to tell.
Go up to Mother.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question.
Yes.
Have you tried doing any face-stepping, teleporting?
I have, yes.
And what has happened when you've done that?
Well, after the initial issues, I found a new Glen to attune myself to.
Hmm.
So mostly I just find myself there.
Okay.
Have you?
No.
Orim!
Sorry. I've just see different things.
That's
different
probably
places.
Because you're not attuned to something. You're going to hurt yourself.
Sometimes it's very enlightening.
Yes. I suppose.
Sometimes it's also disturbing.
Yes.
Like, one time, I saw the statues.
Uh-huh.
Another time, I saw a thing walking across the desert.
Orim, it's an unnecessary risk. You should find someplace safe to attune yourself to.
But I don't know any place safe right now.
Well, you should keep an eye out for one.
Okay.
There's no reason to take any extra risks.
Okay.
So the camp gets set up pretty quickly, and this time around, a larger tent also gets set up.
Hmm.
And the gnomes actually pull out a bunch of wood parts that pretty quickly they put together to be a fairly large, sturdy wooden table. And they assemble that inside the larger tent.
Okay.
The Valorous walks over to Orim. Your father says that we'll be ready to start a planning meeting as soon as his contact shows up. So
okay.
He advises for you to have all of your plans ready to go.
Yes.
He said that it's up to you, but you might want to keep it clear of extraneous bodies.
I see.
Hmm.
Okay. Thank you. Wander over to Ket and Randus.
Mm-hmm.
Hey. So, we're going to have a meeting soon.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
As I kind of thought, my father's being my father.
Hmm.
So, we need to know who else is going to go in to pitch this idea with me, and we need to make sure that we're extremely clear on how this plan is supposed to work. So, all right. Randus, how is everything going to come together? Do you have any written plans, written instructions?
Mm-hmm.
By the way, like, Tor can be there for this as well.
Sure.
Like,
for the discussion.
Yeah. And also, Trell, because it didn't take very long to scout all around. Right. So, like, you guys can definitely be at least within earshot as this is happening.
I got many notes and ideas written down, but nothing codified.
Can you do that quickly?
I can.
Do we know at least how this is supposed to work?
Need some more information on Spud's
location?
Not necessarily the location, but what he's what he's built around himself for protection. But otherwise, it was mostly a assault with as many numbers as we could find on whatever his keep happens to be. So we, the five of us, could get in there.
And the
and
cold iron and the crystals are just there to to affect the or disrupt his
magic.
That's the plan.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Kamis walks over. Did you get the message?
Yeah. Dad's being dad. So he doesn't want anybody else in there, does he?
No, my guess is if he had it his way, he's had whoever his contact is, you and me and mom, and probably that's it. But I don't know. I think this is a great opportunity for you to bring in whoever you want. Because you know what? You are actually the group that's bringing in the cold iron. So you get some say over what's happening.
Right.
He kicked you out of his house once or you stormed out. So it's not like, it's not like you have anything to lose from irking him.
True. True. All right. Well, let's all go in.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll meet you in there. I gotta grab some of my plans that I've been working on.
Okay, great.
Charles making arrows. And when Orm says all of them, she freezes and looks up at him like, all of us?
All of us will go in. This is going to be a team effort. And if we're going to discuss plans on how we as a team are going to deal with Spud, I think everyone should at least be there, if not to have a say, but to at least know what's going to happen so that no one is taken by surprise in any of this.
Why do I have the feeling I'm going to end up speaking a lot more than I want to?
Well, you've met my father.
You
know how he is.
Yep.
And he's going to be even more so right now because I'm sure the pressure of this situation is growing on him.
So are you sure you want to put more pressure on him with bringing all of us in when...
Well, the other option is that we just do it on our own and we don't have any help from him.
Which we
Think that's an option.
Well, I think he realizes that too, and I also think that he realizes he's not going to be able to do anything on his own without our help.
I think that we have spent more than enough time worrying about the feelings getting hurt. And at this point in time, with all due respect to Mr. Rivendorn, I don't think there's anybody around here who's going to keep me from being in there.
Do you want to be in there?
Absolutely.
All right, you're in.
Okay.
I think we all need to be in there.
Well, I just said that.
She wipes her hands on, like, puts her arrow stuff away. Like, she obviously was planning on, like, they're going to talk and I'm going to make arrows and do other things that are not that, but she gets the feeling she's going to be going in there, so she starts putting that stuff back in her bag. Okay.
Bag of arrows.
Called quiver.
Whatever simplified
but the
notes
stuff
that
for
you...
making it's in
I got
her, okay, her fletching bag.
Whatever.
Yeah, she's got a little purse inside of her other purse that's full of like little napping tools and stuff.
So, do we actually have like a tactical plan? Because
no, we have to do recon first.
Okay.
So don't worry about that.
Okay.
You're talking to, you know how like Orm's a big nerd, Cam's a big nerd.
Hey.
You're talking to your parents who are like super nerds.
I can provide like technical specifications if that.
I think
would
that's what'll impress
when it's called
him.
For. Yes.
Okay. Yes. Like I can do that.
I think that's what you know. And you don't have to dumb it down either, Brandis.
That's good.
Pack, dumb it up. that's what I say.
The other way.
Valoris walks over to you. They're ready in there if you're ready.
Great.
Put more runes on it, Randis.
Okay.
But they like.
Lead the way, please.
He turns around and walks into the tent.
As
do we all.
As we head over there, I'm going to position Torque so he's at Orym's right. Like, immediately to Orym's right.
Mm-hmm.
Step up to Orym's left, have Randis next to me, and guide Trell to the opposite side of Torque.
Okay. It's a good thing this tent
wedged into the door.
It's a good thing this tent has a really wide entrance.
You know,
yeah.
As we spread up to the table.
Can we do the slow motion badass power walk?
Yes. I see. The most important part is having Torque as Orym's right hand man.
Right. So you guys walk into the tent. It is very nice. Somehow it's been thoroughly like decorated. Like it looks very nice, like it's been here a month.
This is magic nifty.
Yeah. there is a big table in the center. There's a big kind of actually a grid, a lot like this one. Sitting right at the center, you guys are going to play a big game of D&D.
Yes!
Father, I had no idea.
You
Their
nerd.
Parents really are the biggest
yes,
nerd.
They are.
I am the ranger, and she is the prettiest.
Yes. It's going to get super meta in here.
Yes.
Now, so in this room are the following personages. There's Orym's dad. He is looking over some parchments. They appear to be maps or something. Orym's mother is next to him. Camus is kind of on the other side of the table. Like, basically, they are on the opposite side of the table from the direction that you're coming in. Camus is kind of in the one, like, to your left. Sort of if you're at the edge, it's a big square table. So immediately to your left would be Camus. Next to the table is a, on the other side from where Camus is a chair that was clearly brought over because it also has a couple of tomes stacked on it that was clearly used as a makeshift ladder slash jumping tool for a creature that is now sitting on top of the table. It is a little gray rabbit. And then that little gray rabbit is discussing something with another hedgehog. This one you hadn't seen before. He has kind of a rectangular green hat that kind of has like two points and a brim around it. It looks military. As you walk in... basically, Orym's dad does a double take. Like, he's looking down, he looks over, sees Orym, looks back up, realizes that Orym brought everybody. Doesn't present anything other than a very slow going back to the stuff that he's looking at before setting it aside and walking over. And he says, all right, let's get started. For the sake of clarity, my name is Brow Rivendorn. I am the Master Wizard, Eldritch Protector, and Head Magician of Whitestone. My wife, Althea Greyborn, Il Rivendorn, Lady Cloud Lily. My daughter, Camus. My son, Orym. Orym, why don't you go ahead and introduce your coterie?
Fine, thank you, Father. This is Halston. You can just call him Torque. He's a great fighter. This is Ket. He's a great tactician. This is Randis. Brilliant mind. He is the crafter. He's the one that can make the things that we will need. And of course, you know Trell, our great tracker and warrior.
Very well. Over here, we have my old friend and ally, Oldest Rabbit. Representing our hedgehog reconnaissance, this is Doughboy. The hedgehog kind of stands up on his hind legs and salutes you all.
Give him a proper salute back.
I agree. I'll salute back.
So, our early reconnaissance makes things seem very dire, actually.
Mm.
He waves his hand, and the grid begins to glow, and out of golden points of light, this giant forest appears. This is our widest point of view. This here, right at the center, is the target. He waves his hand, and everything expands. And basically, out of the center, as this thing expands out, you see that there's a large amount of the forest has been cleared out. And at the center of that is a basically what looks like a six-pointed star, if the points also had smaller points coming out of the sides.
Mm-hmm.
And then, again, as it expands, you see that even those points have smaller points coming out of them. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like this multi-tiered kind of thing with, like, progressively smaller points. He says, this is Spud's keep. We are calling it the Amethyst Keep, as it appears to be made out of an amethyst-like structure. Like all fractal plazas, it appears to be completely indestructible. And largely unaffected by most magic. This representation might not give you the most accurate view of it. And he waves his hands, and overlaid on it appears this kind of strangely shaped blue blob. It basically looks like it's flat. And it looks like a very fat letter Q that's kind of oblong.
Mm-hmm.
He says this, and it is slightly smaller than the shape of the keep. This is the old map of the Cerulean Grove. The academy was this area here, and he actually kind of points to the like corner of the Q. Or like the little leg of the queue. Like this keep is larger than that the city whose space it now occupies. From what some flybys have allowed us to see, he flicks his hand and the queue disappears, and all these points appear at all of the smallest kind of star points. Each one of these is a statue. It's a remembrance guard.
Great.
There are hundreds of them around this keep. Having first-hand experience fighting them, what would you say? How would you categorize their fighting ability?
They're slow but strong. It is very hard to give them any damage. Very hard to hit them. But they will really pack a wallop if they connect with you. It would not surprise me if
they're slow.
There. Well,
they seem to move about as quick as anything of that size could.
Right.
But their reflexes aren't as developed.
Reflexes aren't the best, but for the most part, it seems anything that hits them is
going to bounce off mostly.
Yeah.
That's what our reports indicate. You all are about the top of the line. as far as a fighting unit. So if they were giving you trouble, we assume that a direct storming of this keep is essentially out of the question.
They also seem to have some kind of localizing field that seems to hinder movement.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so they are very much created to guard an area and prevent things from escaping.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the reports that we've gotten from the other fractal plazas. Basically, they were meant to be appealing. We believe this is, in a sense, an earnest attempt from Spud to stabilize the Feywild, allow creatures to come live on the plazas. That's why they generate food as well. And they are guarded by these things, but he also prevents things from leaving. And from what we understand, they have a very narrow cognizance. So if they think that there's any sort of problem or fight or crime being committed, their first reaction is to simply kill whatever's causing the problem. So a few of the gnomes that we have spoken to tried to move into these, and even fewer of them managed to escape.
Have you noticed any predilection towards Eladrin, for them to go after Eladrin over anything else?
No.
As when we made it to the Fractal Plaza, the statues didn't seem to react until we brought Orym into view.
Well, that may have been because he came into view. We have not detected any predilection towards Eladrin or fey creatures, but you also have to understand that our group was made up entirely of fey creatures. Mm-hmm. So there's no scientific way for us to gauge that at this point. It's entirely possible that Spud has a way of controlling these directly, seeing things from them, perhaps getting recorded information from them. So we have to operate on the assumption that he knows that we are around somewhere and that Orym is back.
Are there any old tunnel systems that go under?
They're not old. And he motions towards Doughboy, who again stands up and salutes, and says, sir, my family has been able to locate several tunnels. They were created accidentally as this thing, as the plaza, as you call it, appeared above the already extant streets of the city. It seems to follow some of those patterns, so it kind of, I suppose you might say, caused some minor impurities, perhaps, that we have been able to exploit and actually move inside.
Big enough for Torque to go through?
Yes, sir. We believe we might have been able to locate some that are, in fact, large enough for you to do that. Yes.
That might be a way around the statues.
It is. Perhaps. He kind of steeples his fingers as he leans on the table. So, that brings us to the potential of the plan and what we mean to do. The issue is that the Remembrance Guard is a very dominant force, and it's something that we're going to have to get back to. From what you had told us before, and from what we learned from your initial contact with Althern, he was hoping to use a device that was built into the university to drain the power from the sovereigns and then drain it back into the Feywild.
Correct.
And Spud changed the way that device worked. Is that correct?
Yes.
To absorb the power.
From what we've seen, he absorbed the power and it wasn't released back.
Right.
He used a gauntlet.
We think, and mystical readings that some were able to provide vaguely corroborate this. We believe that that device is still extant, which means that potentially it can be used to reverse the process, at least partially, and draining some of any of Spud's power. would significantly help things.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that. Assuming that we want to try that, there is the question of a, for all intents and purposes, omnipotent creature that is going to be very interested in protecting it.
Mm-hmm.
Even if he's not directly there, he would have a lot of power over that.
One would presume a guard system in place for that.
Yes. Aside from the Remembrance Guard, we have to assume that there's something else guarding this.
Mm-hmm.
Something that we would need as someone with a very ample expertise on Fey magic to be able to tackle. Because we have no idea what we'd be dealing with.
Mm-hmm. Someone like you.
Yes, exactly. Someone like me.
Mm-hmm. What about disruptions of the magic? And that's where...
Well, that's essentially what we would have to do.
I think that's where our plan with the cold iron and using some crystals to attune to the right frequencies to help disrupt and maybe even drain Spud's powers.
Mm-hmm. Well, you do not have enough cold iron for us to be able to use it as any sort of functional weapon. The cold iron that you have will protect you to a large degree, but not completely, and that's important for you to realize.
Mm-hmm.
It will protect you from Spud's cantrips, but it won't protect you physically.
Right.
So he would be unable to turn your soul inside out as long as you wear those, assuming they're properly built. Nothing would stop him from uprooting a tower and crushing you with it. Do you see the difference?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, there's not enough cold iron for that. And the idea of using crystals is something that we had certainly thought about. So, what I propose is this. We need two groups. One, both groups, essentially elite combatants and also experts. One to deliver an engineer or more to the central machine and attempt to reverse the flow of it.
Mm-hmm.
Another group to engage Spud directly and distract him. Because the moment that he realizes that something's going on, there's nothing preventing him from simply teleporting there and destroying whoever happens to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Both are extremely dangerous. The group that engages Spud is almost guaranteed casualties.
Mm-hmm.
That said, and we can get back to those here in a second, but that strategy, which is the only sound strategy that we've been able to devise, is mostly null due to the fact that the moment the Remembrance Guard turns inward and attacks, both of those groups would be sitting ducks. Which creates the issue of having to have some sort of outward distraction, which would be extremely dangerous. And you guys all see this moment where Orym's mother shifts her stance a little bit. He looks at her and then looks back and looks back at her, and she kind of shifts her stance again and looks back. Like, we have some ideas about how we might do this, but personally, I don't think that the risks involved would be worth it.
What's the idea?
he goes to say something, and then Althea walks up to the table and says, I've been working on a way to summon multiple elementals at once. I'm confident that I can summon a large enough contingent to pose a credible threat and draw the fire of the Remembrance Guard with minimal risk to everyone else.
But a great risk to you.
At some risk to me. And Orm's father turns to her and turns back and says, at great risk to her.
Tet leans forward. Have we seen Spud's direct presence anywhere outside of his keep?
We have not.
Okay.
That is not saying that it hasn't happened. We just don't have any reports.
Right. And we're certain that there's a machine actually keeping the power flowing to him?
We don't. We are not certain of that. But we have readings. One of Oldest Rabbit's squadron was able to take some readings from the wind of some kind, but they seem consistent with this machine still existing.
So we have both a machine that we need to shut down and a spud that we need to keep away from there.
What kind of forces are you looking at besides just us? Is it just us?
No. Oldest Rabbit has a contingent of warriors who would make up one of the two groups. But aside from one of them, they are mostly warriors. They all have their own skills and abilities, but they're not applicable. If, for example, they were the group that sought out the machine, I would have to go with them.
Okay.
But that's it. You, five animal allies, help from the hedgehogs, and us.
So the people who'd be looking for the machine would be like using the tunnels that he was talking about before.
Yes.
You'd want somebody who'd want to be kind of small and sneaky like.
Yes. Well,
but again, we don't know what could be guarding the machine, so it's not like we can just send.
That's right. No matter what, I feel that we have to send in a strike team.
Right.
Stealth is not going to be as important as staying power. We don't know what's going to be at the other end of that, and sending two relatively sneaky or stealthy Eladrin is not going to do us any good if they meet some kind of creature that can automatically spot them in some way. We need firepower at both, really at all three fronts.
I have a question. Have you had contact with any of the Greater Fae during this conflict with Spud?
No, we have not. If we saw signs of them, we avoid them, as they're an additional complication that we didn't want to get involved with.
There might be some of them who are more or less eager to engage in a good fight.
Orm, are you suggesting involving another Greater Fae in this conflict?
Maybe at least one, if not more.
If not two. Frankly,
if we're throwing options out onto the table, it's something to consider. Yes, there is a consequence to that, but we may need to consider what is the greater good.
One,
never being heard from again, if that means the Feywild gets returned to normal, or possibly nothing happening and the Feywild getting returned to normal.
One of the greater Fey that he speaks of may actually be able to come with an army as well. Something to distract the Remembrance Guard.
He kind of turns his head a little bit and strokes his chin. And Althea turns to him and she says, if you are considering exposing your son to the greater Fae to protect me, I don't think I want to be involved in this situation.
Mom, I've already been exposed to the greater Fae multiple times.
Frankly, he only wants one of us. And I think that we should regroup after we've contacted the greater phase in question.
Hang on. We're talking about the finishing move of a fight that we haven't even started yet.
We're talking about a distraction.
I understand that. But Mrs. Rivendorn has a plan for a distraction, and he just doesn't want her to do it.
You're right. I don't. Because the likelihood of this claiming her life is quite ample.
Her
this claiming any of our lives seems pretty likely, sir.
Her life being claimed risks the rest of ours. If her life is claimed too early, the rest of us don't stand a chance at all.
We can use all the help we can get, and I think there's nothing wrong with knowing what our options are before turning them down.
It's an option.
You have this relationship with the greater Fae.
As much as a relationship as it is a...
whatever it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Everybody has something to lose here. You have grown up a lot, Orym. This is a historical moment in what is going to be the future of the Feywild. The decisions that you make here are going to have a huge impact, and something tells me your friend's not going to listen to me. This is a decision for you and your group to make and decide what you bring to this. I will... and he turns to look at his wife, turns back. I will agree that I am biased against a decision that preserves the life of my wife. But also, I don't want to risk the life of my son and my daughter any more than I need to. But you are all adults. I am not going to sit here and tell you what to do.
Without the help of the Greater Fae, what do you think the chance of success of this of your plan is?
It's hard to tell. Assuming Althea's elementals hold, And
Pez turns to Mother. Have you had any of the elementals go against these?
I have, and they won't be able to consistently take them down, but they are significantly faster than them. So a situation in which they are swarming around them and attacking while trying to stay mobile until the majority of them are pulled in that direction, which is what we want, they should be able to hold. The issue, partially, is my own ability to maintain my connection to them, because that is what keeps them here.
Mm-hmm.
If I am significantly injured or killed, they will all disappear immediately. If the strain becomes too much, they will all disappear simultaneously. So,
how close do you have to be? I mean, can you not be out of reach of these?
I have to be there.
I mean, but can you be, just like when you came and saved us, can you be above the reach of these creatures, the aura of these creatures? And still have control of the elementals?
We can try it, but they have an ability to attack at range as well.
Okay. So, with that in mind, Father, with the two tasks, with the two groups going in, Mother on the outside, what are the chances?
The chances are moderate and deteriorate rapidly with every passing second. Every second that she maintains that bond with the elementals weakens the bond to every elemental. And even if she is not injured, there's only so long that she is going to be able to do it. And we are talking, and he turns to look at her, we are talking about minutes. And she nods.
I think we have the information that we need. And now we have to get more information before we can make a decision.
When do you want to execute the plan?
To a large degree, we are at your mercy on this.
Is every contingent ready to go?
Yes. Oldest rabbits group is ready to go. If we ended up doing this, I believe the best course of action, regardless of what the outside distraction turns out to be, the best course of action is to use an elemental to deliver the five of you into Spud's study.
Agreed.
And you can try and deal with him directly while Oldest Rabbit's contingent and I go under the keep and attempt to disable the machine. If we disable the machine quickly enough, that should give you an ability to deal with Spud, assuming everything goes the way we plan. But you need to understand that this has never happened before. Nothing like this has ever been dealt with. We don't know what sorts of twists and turns we're going to face when we go in there.
Would any additional magical and mechanical knowledge assist you in being able to disable that machine any quicker?
I could use another pair of hands. And Camus says, I'll go with you.
I'd be willing to go along with you then to assist with that.
Camus shakes her head. No, Randos, you need to stay with these guys. You have just the fact that you have cold iron built into you. Yeah. That is a resource that they're going to need in that group.
Very well.
Oldest Rabbit stands up a little bit. It's kind of hard. His back's bad. He says, I believe my group is more than capable of to bring a lot of, at least a lot of upfront damage to the situation. We should be able to safely deliver Camus and Master Browl to their destination.
Very well.
I think then we need a few moments in private to discuss the involvement of the Greater Fae.
The Orym's parents turn to look at each other, and they both turn to look at Orym, and they nod.
All right, so we go outside.
Yeah.
As you guys start to leave, Camus grabs Trell's arm and pulls her aside.
Looks at her. Hey.
Not you. It can't be you. You can't leave me again.
Camus. I have a duty to you and to the natural world as well. And the Feywild is tearing it apart. And one of the Fey is connected to me specifically. I'm not saying absolutely, but it I can't take that off the table.
She lets go of her arm. Fine, do what you have to do. And she walks back over to the table, takes out a bunch of parchment and angrily starts going over some schemata.
Question. Can Orym hear all this stuff even outside the tent?
Sure.
Okay.
Trell comes out of the tent.
Listen. What is everyone's thought on involving just the Hogba?
Don't say his name. Not yet.
For that one.
Look, we...
You want to give me a... we'll say an Arcana check?
Sure.
Is that a D12 you're holding?
No, it's...
Well, yes. It is. Yep. Good catch.
There we go. There we go. That'd be a 38.
38. Okay. Yep. You catch yourself, and you can say our blue friend.
Our blue friend, okay. Yes.
Reflexive Arcana check to not immediately get the attention.
Not to immediately ruin everything.
Yeah, he would almost certainly be listening in if you said his name.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a good idea.
Well, why not?
Because getting involved with him is what started this in the first place. Getting involved with him is what cost us 6 months, and getting involved with him is what let Althorn die, which is what pushed Spud over the side of the crazy in the first place.
Which may be all the more reason to bring him in now to help rectify that problem.
I don't think that it's going to rectify nothing. I think what it's going to do is it's going to create another power struggle and give us another problem that we got to deal with, even if we do take care of Spud. And as far as the other thing, absolutely not. I've been there. I've done that. And I've seen friends burn, and you were there with me, and I ain't going to let that happen again to her.
Well, in regards to Trell's friend, I don't think that he is even on the table.
Yeah.
It is a lot more chaotic than our blue friend is. And from what time we spent with our friend, he seems a little bit more predictable.
How long,
for lack of
a
better word.
How long was it between the time that we told him, hey, can you help us, and when he come back?
True. I want us to have this all on the table because this is a very big decision. Ket?
I think if he would be able to provide any of the armies he's gathered, he's a better option than your mother.
Watch what you're saying about my mother.
That did sound like an insult for some.
Than your mother.
Oh my god.
I feel that while your mother's confidence is well placed, having something that doesn't require a single being to maintain.
Listen, people are going to die.
Right.
Okay.
The problem, the reason I think another army is a better idea is because if she dies, we all die.
Right. So you're in favor of our friend.
I think if he was able to provide an army, I would be. I wish we knew if he was able to provide it.
I think that we need to find out what the parameters are, and then we can say yes or no.
Well, I'm not sure that we're going to have that choice. I think simply calling him is going to create a situation.
I believe
alerting you have
him
to specifically agree to it. We talked to him about it,
right,
and that was what he said.
That's true. There's some sort of deal has to be struck first. And depending on how it's worded, you might be able to take care of a lot of the issues that you're worried about, like when he shows up and things like that.
What is the very first thing Trell ever said to us? Don't trust him. Don't take nothing from him. Don't drink nothing. Don't eat nothing.
And what did you guys do? You ate and drank.
And look what it did.
Torque.
It caused this.
There's no more rules.
Torque.
We're going to lose everything.
And you know what? I'm fine with that. But if we're going to lose everything, we're going to lose everything so that there's something left afterwards. And I don't think that if we bring him in or if we bring in the other one, that there's necessarily going to be anything left over when we're done.
Randus?
I am extremely reluctant to involve them in any way. However, I do feel if we can bring an army into the situation for our benefit, that might be too much of a boon.
If. We ain't never, ever talked about bringing these guys in. This has never been part of the plan.
It is now.
But it's based on a bunch of ifs. It's a if we can get to him, and if he can come, and if he can bring an army. And if he can't.
Well, we're going to find out.
I don't think we are.
So you don't think making him aware of the situation won't cause his interference in any way if we don't agree?
No.
Okay.
He's aware of what's going on. We talked to him earlier. And he kind of doesn't care. But he was interested in a good fight.
And he was interested in exchange.
Yes.
Interested in liberating people.
Yes.
And he's just about as controllable and just about as dangerous as every one of them tornadoes that we saw on the planes getting here. We couldn't control them. We couldn't talk to them. And we sure as heck wouldn't ally ourselves with them in the hopes that they would hit the right people at the right time.
Well, if we could talk to them, though, which we have that option.
We can't make a decision until we know what the parameters are.
So Randus is no.
I think Randus is...
Torque is no.
Does he have an army?
Yes. Trell is...
Yes. I want to find out what our options are. We can't say no to something that's a question mark right now.
Any other thoughts?
Who would make
the
deal?
Is there any harm in just calling him to talk?
I don't think so. But let's not do it right here.
Probably not.
I'm telling you, it's a bad idea.
Duly noted.
Well, Kit, you're our tactician. I think we should go with what you think is best here.
I think the option that we could have an army is worth it.
Let's see if he'll even talk.
You want to do the honors, Kit?
Yeah, but like you said, we don't want to bring him here.
Okay.
You've scouted around here. Lead us to...
All right. Come, who's coming?
I'm definitely coming.
I think we're all coming.
Oh,
okay. Okay.
All right. You go find a different glen that is removed from this one.
Okay.
Do we just need to call his name?
Into the wind?
3 times? All together now?
Yeah.
Hogba. 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 And on that note, let us end this episode of Critical Hit. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing this experience. podcast@majorspoilers.com. That's the place where you want to send your emails. Oh, we haven't done an email bag in a while.
Ooh.
No. Don't you dare.
Next 5 episodes are mailbag. I have spoken.
And then,
panel discussions and other things. So.
Then we need to talk about our epic destiny.
Yes.
Yes. We do need to talk about that, but we'll do that in private.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much. And here's hoping that all of your dice rolls are critical hits.
About this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.